Our next presenter is Dr. Denise Valenti. Dr. Valenti has been involved in the provision of healthcare services to the elderly throughout her career and was instrumental in developing the aging curriculum for schools of optometry. She received her gerontology training from Oregon State University and did her residency training in low vision rehabilitation at the University of Houston. She currently does research related to Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease and has received NIH grants and was recognized by AARP as an outstanding gerontology scholar. Please welcome Dr. Denise Valenti.
I was the oldest AARP scholar. They needed a token gray hair. Before I actually give my talk, I want to apologize ahead of time. I have cardiomyopathy, muscular dystrophy. What does that mean? It means I cough a lot, and every once in a while, muscles from here to here go on strike. It sometimes is bothersome when sometimes people hear me cough and gag. It doesn't bother me. I just look at it as God telling me I should be grateful I'm not dead yet. A little background about Alzheimer's. One of the very critical need in the field of Alzheimer's is a definitive diagnosis. Right now, the definitive diagnosis is autopsy upon death. There are biomarkers that are being looked at and used currently with imaging and blood sampling. The need for a biomarker early in the disease process is because as treatments to treat symptoms and treatments to potentially alleviate the disease itself, there's the belief it needs to be introduced very early in the disease process, ideally before there are even symptoms. Some of the work I'm involved in and work of other folks are showing that one of the earliest areas affected by Alzheimer's is the visual system. Acknowledgement of who funds me. Currently, over the last few years, I've had no support, but much of the work that I'm going to conclude with was funded by Forest Laboratories, Alzheimer's Disease Treatment Efficacy. Other support over the years has come from Welch Allyn, Fight for Sight, the NIH, and again, one thing that I'm very proud of is AARP. At one point, they selected 20 gerontology scholars. I hope they do that in the future again. As I said, visual pathology in preclinical Alzheimer's disease, there is visual pathology. Anne McGee looks at all the brains donated through the Framingham Heart Study. Anne McGee has received a lot of media attention recently for her work in sports-related brain encephalitis. So people may be familiar with that work. But what I'm most citing is her work where she looked at the brains of 41 donations, people that have been followed for years, so their background was well characterized, their disease state, their cognitive state. The 41 brains were a mixture of normal, mild impairment, and moderate impairment. But what was very compelling and a surprise to the group was that 52% of those that had been diagnosed as normal, no memory loss, no impairments, they found that they had Alzheimer's pathology in the visual association area. 52% of normal had Alzheimer's pathology that wasn't expected to be there. Now, all of those with a diagnosis of Alzheimer's had pathology in the visual association area. Now, the visual association area is right here. This is an area that does some functions I'll explain in a moment. The area where you see 20/20 is a different area. The researchers concluded that the visual association may actually be the very first area impacted by Alzheimer's disease. The damage may occur even before hippocampal memory areas are affected. A lot of those folks that were normal but had visual association pathology did not have any pathology in the hippocampal memory area. This was not noted before because they really hadn't looked at these areas. And one of the reasons nobody had really explored those areas is that the symptoms or the functions that are impacted in the visual association area are not ones that are traditionally measured, and they're very difficult symptoms for a clinician to elicit a response, let alone a patient articulating the functional losses. The losses include motion, speed, contrast is grays to dark and whites, and flicker. Now, flicker has been actually investigated with functional MRI. They specifically looked at the entire brain but concentrated on the visual areas. What this MRI study did, and functional MRI looks at volume of blood flow, a change in volume of blood flow from a baseline resting state to the activity state. What they looked at was a flicker, and what they found, this is normal, but the flicker function, the ability to respond to it, was decreased in dementia. So back again, this is a normal finding with the volume of blood flow. Here's mild Alzheimer's and here's moderate. And you can see that the actual volume of blood flow decreases. This is actually the graphical depiction. This is change from baseline of blood flow volume. Along here is the rate of flicker. The top line is normal. The middle line is mild Alzheimer's and the bottom is moderate. And you can see as the flicker increases, the more difficult it is for those with Alzheimer's and the greater the disparity and different based on the severity of Alzheimer's. They did 0 to 15 hertz. So what this says is we know at 15 hertz, those with mild to moderate Alzheimer's have some problems. What happens is there are losses in the optic nerve axons that are secondary. They're a result of the cell damage that occurs in the visual association area. So as you get losses or damage here in the cells, their connections start to deteriorate. And as the connections deteriorate at a significant rate, you start to lose the axons and some of the cells here. So the damage isn't in the eye. It's in the brain, but it's retrograde. And here's just another way to look at those cross sections. This is the eye itself, the cornea, the lens, and here's the nerve. And what starts to get damaged is the nerve. It's not damage in the eye, it's just that the axons, the nerve fibers that go into the eye, are retrogradely damaged from the damage in the brain. But the dilemma is that we can't see this. As a doctor looking in at the retina, this is the eye, you can't see this. Now, some people say they can see it subtly. Good luck to them. I can't see it. But what we do find, and I'll discuss this further, that in Alzheimer's there's a particular area that is more vulnerable. Why it's a particular area, we don't know yet. We just know it's vulnerable. There's technology that is currently used for glaucoma, diabetes, and macular degeneration that is actually picking up these losses in Alzheimer's disease. Now, what I'm going to be showing you is the older version of this technology. There is actually a newer version that's much, 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 much better than this one is. So the sensitivity of picking this up, those papers haven't hit the PubMed and the literature yet, but we're going to find even greater sensitivity. OCT structural imaging, optical coherence tomography, has identified the retrograde damage. It takes a picture, an image of the nerve, but it's not a normal picture. The image is similar to ultrasound, but instead of sound, it uses light waves. For the patient, though, for the subject, it's actually just like taking a picture of the eye, and it can occur in seconds. What it does is it localizes some of the structure. Here's the area I was saying is vulnerable. What it does is take a picture. This green line is actually the picture. It lays it out on a straight line. So this is the image generated. It marks it, much like MRI, where it marks functional MRI, if any of you are familiar with that, if they're looking at a part of brain, they mark out an area. The machine itself marks out the area, so the white line defines the axons, nerve fiber layer. And right here, we are finding that there are reductions in Alzheimer's. Now, you don't necessarily have to take the image and figure it out. The machine itself graphs it numerically. And these are the publications to date. I'm sure there are more, but in the PubMed, so you don't have to take my word for this, that this occurs. All right, but the drawback of optical coherence tomography is it a clinical test. It is available in the majority of offices that provide care for glaucoma, macular degeneration, diabetes. It requires a skilled technician to operate it. There's another technology that I'm going to talk about. It's a screening tool. It is portable, and it's used to screen eye disease. It is easily administered. A trained monkey can operate it. The reason I say that, because I think it would be a fabulous tool in the DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles, you know, to screen for eye disease and dementia. I'm not a big fan of eye screening. Let me explain that. I think if you think somebody needs an eye exam or an eye screening, they should get a total eye exam. And the same thing occurs for other diseases. What I am advocating is looking at technology that can screen for other diseases other than the one you're looking for. And frequency doubling technology, I believe, is one of those. It's a very easy test for the patient. It tests functional losses in visual field. The losses in Alzheimer's disease identified with this technology actually correspond to the losses reported in the literature with optical coherence tomography. What the test utilizes is a target that flickers. It flickers already at a higher rate that we know is deficit in Alzheimer's. It flickers at 25 hertz. It stays at that flicker, but what it varies is the contrast. What the patient looks at is they're actually, the target, what they're looking at in the machine is a white field. But what the field does is it divides it into 17 areas, and there are 17 different spots that get tested with this stripe. It takes less than 4 minutes per eye, usually less, but I say 4 minutes because cognitively impaired can take a little longer. I have found that with a mini mental of 15 or better, it actually is a reasonable test. Reasonable. For those of you that work with Alzheimer's, there are always caveats, and there's those individuals that, you know, have a high mini mental, you can't do on a lower, but it's a reasonable test. What the readout is, it shows you what the findings are in a gray scale. Black is bad disease, gray is moderate disease, and white is normal. It also provides a reliability report of fixation loss, false positive, and false negatives. This is an average Alzheimer's finding, and what we're finding is that there are deficits in the inferior field, and this corresponds to optic nerve loss. Now, that may not make sense for those of you that aren't familiar with visual fields, but if you look at the nerve, it's the inverse. Nerve is structure, visual field is function. So an inferior functional loss on visual field actually corresponds structurally to the opposite, superior. So the two do match, even though it doesn't make sense when I say inferior one test, superior the other. And you don't have to take my word for the flicker. There is now more reporting in the literature on flicker testing and Alzheimer's. There are only one other, and there is a new one out that does use this test specifically. But there are people exploring the contrast flicker test. Now, you don't hear, this test was actually used in a neurology clinic, where we just sat and asked everybody that showed up in the neurology clinic that weren't at risk for seizures because of the flicker to participate in a screening. This is the data on the Alzheimer's disease. We used as controlled the caregivers that came in with them. You don't have to really pay much attention to everything, but one thing is notable, the age, a lot of failures, a lot of unreliability, and a lot of disease. Here are the controls. What we found after we did this was the average age of the control was much younger. That just reflected the nature of a caregiver bringing anybody into a neurology clinic. So we for this particular study, we did eliminate the younger ones and had a cutoff of 60. What is notable here, though, is high pass rate, a lot of reliability, and less disease. So here's the summary. Once we eliminated and threw out all the unreliable tests, and all the disease, we still found a failure rate that couldn't be accounted for eye disease, meaning it might be Alzheimer's or, you know, the test. We knew that these subjects had Alzheimer's. And it just showed, this is just talking about the statistical analysis we used. It was significant. However, the incidence of disease was not significant compared to our controls. Thank you. And again, that study was paid for by Forest Laboratories.
Okay, we do have time for audience questions if there are any.
Yes.
I'm curious, you think Alzheimer's but not other dementias? And then how about geriatric in general, the other people in general different tests? And then is it clinically being used as those?
It's not clinically being used, but what is intriguing is the number of the optical coherence tomographies that are actually being purchased by neurologists for MS and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Every once in a while, I'll hear an antidote. The difficulty in neurologic disease is a lot of neurologic diseases do impact the visual system. So no test in isolation using the visual system, as far as I can tell, is going to diagnose. However, but to contribute for a reason to suspect when there are no memory losses. I study Parkinson's. So it does pick up a different type of visual dysfunction in Parkinson's, again, early on. Parkinson's, we know more about the visual system, though, than Alzheimer's.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah. I think paying close attention to the visual function is important for fall preventions. I think that a thorough assessment of the visual system, including understanding function, is very important for Alzheimer's, because those of you that work clinically, it's not at all unusual that they're wearing an outdated pair of glasses. They're wearing somebody else's glasses. And sometimes, even when you bring them in clinically, updating those things is ignored because they're not complaining. And a person may look at what are traditional ways of looking. Do you need your glasses changed? Are you having problems with driving? Well, usually they don't complain because you really don't want them driving. The other thing that can occur, and there's a big project looking at it, is postponing cataract surgery. You know, because there are reductions in contrast in a lot of functions, I have to say I was one of those that was guilty when I used to do house calls because of all the other complexities of doing surgery on a cognitively impaired. And so I'd say, well, when it's 20/50, now it's like the sooner the better. Because then you start to eliminate other issues. For example, there's a guy out there that's big on telling, and he publishes, to prevent falls, not using multifocal glasses, not using bifocals. Well, that's a good advice for a certain percentage. It's not necessarily good for a lot of people that have strong distance prescription and new reading glasses. However, if you've eliminated the cataract on the hands of a very good surgeon, generally, you don't need distance glasses. So you've eliminated a factor that contributes to falls, trying to figure out which pair for reading and which not. So I got off on a tangent. I'm sorry.